Hey there, welcome to Board Game Hot Takes, the podcast where we give our immediate reactions to the hottest board games just minutes after playing them. My name's Tim.
And I'm Adam.
We're going to depart from our normal format for this episode, and instead of a hot take review, we're going to talk about board game reviews. We're going to talk a little bit about the format that we use, what works about it, what doesn't, and some ways we're going to try to make it work and make it better. But we're also going to talk about our five favorite board game reviewers, the reviewers that we lean on and listen to kind of make choices on what games we pick out. Hope you're interested, and let's get into the conversation. So Adam, let me start by asking you a question. The way that our podcast goes, and when we're talking about a game, do you consider that a review? Do you think it has the trademarks of a review?
I think it's a review, but kind of a different take on a review than a lot of board game reviewers out there. I like that first impression that we get. If it's a new game to me or a new game to the group, it's a feeling that not a lot of people talk about, is that first sense of what you get from a board game. I do like how we do it, so I do consider it a form of a review. I like that we talk about the mechanisms that we realize, just the things that we realize and the things that stand out to us, and how that makes us feel. So I'm going to bounce that question back to you, Tim. How do you think of it? You asked the question, so I assume you have some more insightful thoughts than I do.
Well, no, I've just been struggling with that the whole time since we started this podcast. We kind of came up with what the format was going to be. I really kind of consider what we do more just a conversation. Hey, we're some friends hanging out. We finished a game. Let's chat about it. You know, that's what it is, but we are still giving our thoughts on a game. We have a little bit of a unique take on it. I do think it has some of the trademarks of a review. You know, we're still giving our opinion. We're giving our opinion whether we liked it, whether we didn't like it. So there is some review there. But generally, I guess I just don't feel like I have the legitimacy to be considered a reviewer, right? So I'm happy to step away from that mantle and just say, hey, I'm just having a conversation.
Right. I like that we're just like a couple like nerd friends that get together and talk about a game after we play it and how it made us feel. Right. I don't ever want to feel like I'm up here on a pedestal talking about why I'm so correct about board games. No, I just like talking about what was fun and what wasn't and what made sense to me. And I think that's neat. It's not so like formal. And I think that's part of the appeal to me, is we're not like, oh, check us out, we're the ultimate authority on board games. We're just like some dudes that talk about games that we like.
Yeah, exactly. And we aren't the ultimate authority. There's a lot of games we've never played. There's a lot of people that have played more games than we have. That definitely, there's a lot of people that can articulate better what works or what's good about games or why they're better designed or not, and things like that. So
I get embarrassed at how bad I articulate like this sentence, for instance.
So that's great. You know, we'll drop the mantle, but we do still say that we're doing, you know, our hot take reviews. So I guess let's talk about that. What is a hot take review, and where does that come from? Our whole plan for this was to make it easy for us to get in and record an episode every week. So we have our weekly game night with a small group of friends, and we just wanted to talk about the game that we played that night. We're calling it a hot take review because we're jumping into it directly after playing the game. And sometimes that means that it's the first time we've ever played it. So we're kind of giving our insights right after playing.
We call it a hot take review because we're too lazy to put in the real work on an actual like in-depth board game review.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, honestly, we don't have the time for it. I don't, you know, like I honestly couldn't fit in, especially if we're going to put out a weekly episode, I couldn't fit in the amount of effort. Okay. So I've actually heard, I had a lot of reviewers, you know, I've listened to reviewers who are like, we play a game 6 or 7 times. We play a game at least 10 times before we review it. And that's awesome. I mean, I think there's a lot of value to that. We just can't do that, especially if we're going to be talking about games and as many games as we do and as frequently as we do. So part of it is just, it's not a possibility. And I think there's value in what they're doing by spending a lot of time with it. How important do you think it is, Adam, to have played a game many, many times before giving your thoughts on it?
Well, I think there's pros and cons for people like us that don't have much time. We're probably going to want to hear that first impression. Like, does the game make a good impression? There's so many games out there, and there's so many good games out there, and there's probably a lot of bad games out there. I think any game, if you like the theme enough, you like certain mechanics enough, you're going to find ways to like that game. You're going to be able to dig deep. You're going to play it again and again and again if you want to, and you're going to be able to find like the nuance and strategy and things that appeal to you, and you're going to be able to discover new things about that game. So I think any game can have those little nuances that you go and explore. And the way we do it, we get that first impression I think we're getting better and better at seeing like, oh man, if on subsequent plays, I could see where this kind of strategy can emerge or this kind of strategy can emerge. So doing these kind of hot takes gives us an eye for what a game's potential might be. Whereas someone who does play games 6, 7, up to, you know, 10 times, however many times before they actually put a solid review out there, they do get to see like what emerges and the nuances and little intricacies of this and that of a game. And if it's, it feels samey after 6 or 7 plays, or if it's different every time. So yeah, they do get the actual exploration rather than what we see after a first impression potential for a blossoming of a game after a certain amount of plays. So that to me is kind of the biggest downfall of reviewing a game after 1 or 2 plays. What are your thoughts about that, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, we don't always just play a game one time before reviewing it. Sometimes the games we're playing, you know, the way we pick games really is we pick games that one of us wants to play that night. We kind of round robin who's picking the games for the night. And a lot of the time, the games we're picking are our favorite games. So it could be games like we played Everdell a few weeks ago that I've played over 100 times. So, you know, you're not always just getting a first review, but sometimes you are. And last week was a really great example where we did Rajas of the Ganges. I played it once before, but it was a first time play for Adam and Jen who talked about it. So sometimes we are having that very first take, but we're not always. And I just wanted to mention that. The other kind of neat thing with our format is that sometimes one of us has a lot of experience in the game and other people don't. So I always find that that's a pretty interesting way when you have that experienced player talking at the same time as somebody who's just played it for the first time.
I agree, Tim. I can think of maybe 5 games that were totally new to all of us, maybe less than that, like right. Dinosaur World, Rajas of the Ganges. I think we had 2 or less plays. Curious Cargo was pretty new to most of us. The 2 of us were the only ones that played. And maybe like...
Yeah, Tungru and Godspeed were a couple more. But you're right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Most of the time, one of us at least has played the game a number of times.
Exactly, exactly. So I do like having that kind of opinion on a game where at least one of us has played the game 5, 6, or maybe 20, 30, 100 times.
Right.
And the other few of us has only played it. Maybe it's a new time for one of us. Maybe it's less than 5. So I like having that difference of opinion on someone who's played the game a handful of times versus someone who's maybe new to a game. I think that's pretty nice.
Yeah. And I think it's the advantage that if a reviewer can play a game, they know that 6, 7, 8 times, it's a pretty interesting amount of plays, because there have been games that I've learned in the past and I loved it on my first play, lived in my first couple plays, and then it just started to feel samey and it started to get boring. And so I get that, you know, we are not always going to know that if we're just reviewing after a first play. And there are other games where they just got better as you got to explore them more. A great example recently was Beyond the Sun. When we reviewed it, it was my second play of it, and I loved it a lot more than my first play. But subsequent plays, it's even brought out more. I've seen more and more that came out of that. So I get the value in it. But that being said, I also do think that there's a value in giving a first thought, first impression, because I think there are a lot of gamers, people that are playing the hobby board games that we are, and I'm sure it's not everybody, most of them do not have 1 or 2 games that they're playing, right? They're people that have a ton of games to play. And if they're going to have a bad experience on the first play, they're probably never going to bring it back again. Because why? You've got so many other games to play. You've got, you know, your friends are competing and they want their games to play. And if anybody at the table has a bad time, that's not, you know, that's not a good experience. And they probably aren't going to play it anyway. So I think there's still value in telling people on a first play, this wasn't fun for me. This wasn't a good experience. It dragged. It was boring. It didn't get me excited. Even if it's on a first play, that might change over time, but it still has some value.
That's a very good point, Tim. That's the thing. Like, should we try a new game or should we go to a classic that we know is going to be fun for sure? And that's always the risk. It's fun to see, like, if there's a game a few of us are excited about and it works with the group, or like Capital Lux, I was pretty excited to play it and I enjoyed it a lot. But Chris wasn't a big fan. I think you were pretty mediocre on it, maybe okay with it, Steve. Steve seemed to like it a lot, but is it going to come back? Probably not for this group.
Right.
It's kind of neat to see like what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. Rajas of the Ganges from last week was a great example of that too, because me and Steve loved it. I had a great time, and I've been all week thinking about that game and wanting to buy it. But like, you and Jen really didn't enjoy your experience at all with it. So I'm never going to ask to bring that back out on game night. So, you know, I think that that's still valuable for some people. The other thing I think that makes our review work okay is not only that some of our players may have more experience, but that we're getting, we do have different perspectives. And we try to, at least other than the one episode so far that we've just had some two-player games, we've tried to have at least three people talking about the games. And these are people with different experiences and different tastes in games. You know, I think as our listeners get to know us, you should start to understand, hey, Tim has the same taste as me. He likes this type of game. So if he liked this game, then it's probably good for me. If Chris didn't like it, that's okay, because Chris never likes that type of games that I like to play. So hopefully there's some value in just getting to learn our personalities and our tastes, and understanding that even if one of us doesn't like it, it doesn't mean that it's not a good game. You know, there's still value there.
And not only that, I like our perspectives as far as experience too. I feel like you probably have the most experience of us in the game group. Maybe I'm a close second or not a very close second. And then Chris probably there. I don't know how much Steve, probably he's similar experience to you. And then I like when Jen comes on, who's relatively new to the hobby and has her perspective too. I think that's great. Like,
right.
I still consider myself really new to the in-depth board game hobby, you know, as compared to someone who's been playing serious games for the last 20 years. That's not me for sure. So I like the different perspective as far as experience levels with more strategic type board games as well.
Yeah, for sure. But don't sell yourself short, Adam. I mean, we've played 50 different games together over the last year alone. So you have plenty of experience under your belt.
Well, you're right. I am pretty much an expert in all board games now.
Right. So, you know, one of the things I'll mention, you know, that's kind of related there is that as we get to talking about our top five board game reviewers, the reviewers that we kind of rely on and that we go to if we want to, you know, get feedback on a game before we decide to buy it or whether it's something that we're going to be excited about. I think when I go through my list, you're going to find that most of my list consists of groups of people that are reviewing it. It's not one reviewer, because I've consistently found that if I go to one of these reviewers that just reviews on their own, it's a hit or miss whether I'm going to agree with their perspective, you know? And I think that reviews can be, it can be biased not only based on that one person's taste, but it can be biased on how good of a day they're having, whether they're hydrated, whether they got enough sleep, or they had to just play four other games in a row, or, you know, whatever. It happens to me, and I see it happen to our group. So, I think that listening to one person's review that says, I didn't enjoy that game, it's a 6 out of 10, you know, I wouldn't bother, I think that you're potentially missing out on some, you know, some gems there.
That goes back to the earlier question. One of the pitfalls with a hot take review, what if we're just having a bad day that day?
Yeah.
And we're sleepy, sure, coming in, and we're just like clicking through and messed up some stuff, and we're just like, I don't even care about this right now. I don't know. I just got other stuff going. So yeah, the emotional state of, like, for instance, me playing a board game can have a lot of effect of, I don't want to say a lot because I want to hope that I'm being like somewhat unbiased, but I know it can. It can influence how I feel about a game or experience that night for sure. So that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true. And, you know, like, I'll go back to last week's review of Rajas of the Ganges, which was, I could just tell, I mean, I know you didn't have a great time with it, but halfway through, Jen's like, when is this game going to be over? I just want it to be over, right? But but what if we decided that we were going to play that game 7 to 10 times before we gave a review on it? Like, how miserable would that have been for her and for you to commit to that? And then what if you discovered two games in that you hated it, or three games in, and then you know you're kind of committed to us to suffer through another four games of it when we could be playing something that we actually want to enjoy and have fun with? So,
or what if I hated it on the first three plays and the fourth play I was like, you know what, this game's freaking amazing.
Yeah, well, that's true. So that can definitely happen as well, although I don't think it's common. I you know, from my experience, I've typically, if somebody really hates a game, at least after a couple of plays, you know, there's just an ingrained negative emotions attached to it, regardless of what else happens. One other flaw, I think, of our format, which has definitely happened before, is that sometimes on a first play, you get some rules wrong. I try at least to prep. If we're playing a new game that we've never played before, I try to learn it really well. I watch how to play videos. I try to check rule books for things I'm not sure about. You know, we try to share videos so that everybody's had a chance to at least watch a how to play video or rules, you know, explanation or a playthrough or something. So we try to be prepared, but you know that on a first play, I can't tell you how many games I played, even when we weren't reviewing, where we got through the first play. And then later that week, I was thinking about it. I'm like, I should check this one rule because something didn't feel right about that. And then you found out that you played it completely wrong the whole time. So that can also happen on a first play, or more likely on a first play, I think.
I completely agree. It's one of the things that I put on a little, I don't know, call them show notes here too, is rules mistakes. Mm-hmm. I feel like both of us, Tim, tried pretty hard to, if not watch a video beforehand, then one of us has a rule book open as we're playing, and someone takes a turn, then we're like, well, not so sure about that. Let me go check that out. And then we'll try to correct it on the spot if we can. But then at least we're good, I feel like, about going back and being like, oh, Blood Rage, you know, if Ragnarok happens, then you should get 3 points this round and 4 points this round. And so, yeah, the rules mistakes can and will happen, and they're going to happen in the future. That can be an issue, but you know what? It can be an issue on a first play of a game, and then you'll catch it, but it could also be the issue on a 30th play of a game. You're like, oh my gosh, this whole time I've been playing the rule wrong.
Yeah.
And I still like the game enough to play it 30 times, so maybe it's not that big of a deal. But I agree. That's one of the things I have on my list as a big whoopsie for our format can, you know, shed the incorrect light on a game potentially.
Yeah. Although I can't think of any times, even when we discovered an incorrect rule, where, you know, that rule would have changed somebody's feelings drastically or would have changed their opinions, right? Where it would have made the game not fun or not work or would have worked only because of that rule that we broke. So even though that can happen, I don't think it's typically probably having a major impact on our perspectives.
Agreed. So one of the downfalls about our format, speaking of downfalls, I feel like we might miss kind of the emergence or the, you know, I can't pinpoint the emergence or the nuance, deeper strategies, or just certain discoveries.
For sure.
Or, you know, the way cards might interact or certain mechanisms might interact. I feel like that's something we miss big time on a lot of these kind of first take initial impression reviews. You have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do. You know, there are definitely games where I find they get more interesting and more fun after multiple plays. But I wouldn't say that too often. Again, like if I've enjoyed a game on a first play, it just gets better as I get to explore it deeper. If I didn't like a game on a first play, it's very rare that I end up liking it later on. I agree. I don't think we can maybe, you know, share with people what the most exciting parts are, what there is to explore sometimes on a first play. You don't get to experience how the variability of the game feels. You don't get to experience whether it starts to feel repetitive. Like I said, it's positive stuff that you're missing, but it's also negative stuff. So yeah, I agree with that. I think that's something that we are potentially missing out on.
Can you think of any examples? One that comes to mind for me is Everdale. I can tell that there's like lots of combos in there and you know, I missed tons of them on my first play, but I know they're in there just thinking about the cards more and more and the different ways they work in game scoring or, you know, comboing up during the game. That's one of them. And then Red Rising on the first play, I could tell, I mean, I think my mental state wasn't quite with it. You know, I could tell that there was a lot of cards in there that combo together, but my brain couldn't put them together on that first play. And then subsequent plays, oh yeah, this is how the game's supposed to work. I knew that it was there on the first play. I wasn't figuring it out, wasn't putting the pieces together, but subsequent plays, yep, I found how they combo together and how it's supposed to work a little more. That's a couple examples I can think of that did that for me. Anything come to mind for you?
Yeah, I would say there's a couple games that I've started to understand more on subsequent plays. One was Vindication, and we reviewed it on our second play, so we had already played it before. But I think that game showed me that it did have some more potential that I hoped it did after the first play. Now, I know that wasn't a hit with you guys, but I think even Chris appreciated it more on a second play than he did, even though, you know, he was the one that hated it the most just because he doesn't like that kind of abstract cube pushing type of games. Uh-huh. It doesn't mean that it was a huge hit with anybody. And even I kind of felt after a second play that, okay, it does have more to explore, but I don't think it's enough for me to want to, you know, keep going back to it. But that one definitely did, you know, the opportunity to play a second time gave me a chance to kind of dig in a little bit more and see what the other options are. And then another one that surprised me, and I've mentioned already, but that was Beyond the Sun. And that was that after we played our first game together, and I thought about it that weekend, and then we were scheduled to play another one before the night that we recorded the podcast. And that whole weekend, I was just like not interested in going back to it. I thought the game mechanisms were interesting enough, but I was just so turned off by just the presentation of it. And I was feeling like maybe the mechanisms were not as interesting as they appeared on a first visit. And so it was fun to go back to that one a second time and have an even better time with it and get to explore that as you got better at it, that the strategy opened itself up and you got more opportunities to do more interesting things. And that's continued to grow with subsequent plays. So that's definitely a game where I would have benefited from playing it 5, 6, 7 times first. If we'd reviewed it after that first night, probably would have even been more negative on it, you know, than I was. I wasn't negative on it in the review, but I think I would have been in that first play. So
Yeah.
Definitely can happen. Now, so one of the things that we are trying to do here is, and you're going to hear it tonight for the first time, is we understand that there's some flaw with only playing a game one time and talking about it. So one of the things we're going to start doing is when we get back to a game again, we're going to do what we're calling a double take review. And that means that essentially we're just going to talk about a game that we've already played and reviewed, but we're going to kind of come back to it and tell you whether our feelings changed, what we learned differently about it, just kind of a way to explore and let people know whether our first thoughts were accurate, whether they were way off, whether we liked coming back to it and whether it was worth it. So that's one of the things we're going to be adding in tonight. And I think you're going to see that coming back on a regular basis. It won't be a regular, you know, we're not going to definitely do it every 6 months. We're going to come back to a game we played before. But when we do get a chance to come back and explore a game that we've talked about on the podcast, we want to bring our thoughts back into it, give you a, you know, kind of a follow-up on that. So we're going to be doing that tonight with Eclipse Second Dawn for the Galaxy. So that's going to be our first double take review. But before we do that, we did want to talk a little bit about what we like in board game reviews and talk about some reviewers that do those things well, give them a little bit of credit for inspiring us, but also helping us find some games that we really loved. So why don't we start with that? We're going to just go ahead and count down from our top five. We'll be fairly quick about this, but Adam, why don't you jump in? Who's your number five?
My number five. So you mentioned Beyond the Sun just now, and I believe it was Dan Thoreau did a review, a podcast with the designer of Beyond the Sun, and kind of went in depth on his kind of ideas for making the game. But just in general, Dan Thoreau is an amazing reviewer, very high level, very in depth, to the point of being over my head many times. The guy is just freaking smart and intelligent and articulate. And, you know, he writes these pages and pages reviews on board games and goes so in depth. And sometimes I can make it through there. Sometimes I'm just like, I this guy's lost me. I need to go look at a thesaurus and figure out what he's talking about and learn more about the English language so I can understand this guy. So if you're looking for very in-depth, high-level, I don't know if high-level is the right word, just very in-depth, intricate, well-thought-out, very articulate reviews, Dan Thoreau is the guy.
Yeah, so that's a great choice. Dan Thoreau is, he only does written reviews, right? Has he done anything like podcasts or videos?
He has a podcast as well, too.
Yeah. Oh, he does? Mm-hmm. Okay, I wasn't aware of that. Yeah, I was going to call out, I really love when I've read Dan Thoreau's reviews, and I'll have to check out the podcast now that you've mentioned that. The thing with me with reviews is that almost all of my media consumption related to board games is done while I'm doing something else. So I don't feel like I've got the time or I want to spend the time reading a long written article. I don't tend to watch videos because you have to focus on it. You know, it's like watching TV. It's just not something I spend my time doing. So most of my board game content that I'm consuming is podcasts because I can do it while I'm, you know, working out, while I'm running. I can do it while I'm cooking dinner or while I'm just driving or whatever. So I was going to say, I really love what I've read from Dan Thoreau, but I just don't consume enough of his stuff just because it is written. There's another reviewer I want to call out as well, a newer reviewer that I've been following on Twitter. It's actually two reviewers, but it's Two Moms Game. And there are two women who live together. They have a family, but they review all kinds of games, family weight games, but a lot of really heavy games too. And I love their written reviews. I just don't have time to consume them all. But I did want to call them out and Dan because really great stuff. But I'm going to have to check out Dan's podcast. I didn't realize he had one. So that's cool.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff on there. Some great interviews too.
Awesome. I'm going to call out, like I mentioned, most of the reviewers that I really love listening to has to do with the fact that there are more than one personality involved in that review. So I get to learn their personalities, learn what they like and what they don't like and how they match up with mine. And the fact that they get to, you know, kind of bounce ideas off each other and talk about it, I think that always helps me. So most of my reviewers that you're going to find have more than one person involved. The first one I'm going to call out is a podcast. They also have a YouTube channel now, but it's a podcast I discovered a few years ago. And just something about their personalities, they're just welcoming, they're fun to listen to. And it's a podcast called Meepletown. And it's these two guys, John and Dean. I think they live in one of the southern states. So they got their friendly, welcoming southern accents. But they just talk about the types of games that I really like to play, a lot of midweight kind of Euro type of games. And I like both their opinions, you know, on certain games I agree with John, on certain games I agree with Dean, but I always know when I listen to one of their reviews on a game that I'm going to have a really good sense for how the game plays, what's good about it, and whether I'm going to like it. So that's really been helpful to me. I love listening to their podcasts almost every week. Yeah, I've actually discovered some really great games through the Meepletown podcast. What about you, Adam? What's your number four?
Number four is, everyone's heard of these guys, Shut Up and Sit Down. They've been, they're giants in the board game review industry, not only for their board game reviews, but for their entertainment. They have a nice little production. They put together some clever videos. They also have a nice podcast. It's just highly produced, very well produced, very articulate. They go in depth. They talk about a myriad of things. I don't always agree with their tastes, but I enjoy the reviews and the work they put in to putting them together. So that's my number four, Shut Up and Sit Down. Like you said, Tim, I like a group that has a wide variety of perspectives.
Yeah, no, I'll just quickly on Shut Up and Sit Down. You know, they do some very well-produced, well-scripted video reviews. They got costumes, they're sitting around the board, they get into a lot of detail. You know, I don't rely too much on their video reviews because I feel like they are too scripted. They're very clever and they're trying to be clever, and I've played games that they have said were the best thing in the world, and there's flaws to those games that they just didn't point out. And then I played games that they called out how terrible it was, and I completely enjoyed it. So I don't rely on their video reviews. I have been enjoying their podcast though lately. They have a recent podcast and kind of a mixed group of characters that come in and out. Yeah, I think they definitely bring some value to me there.
I think it's Ada and Tom are the newest guys.
Yeah.
They are fantastic. Yeah. I was a little hesitant, but man, I can't get enough. They're clever and smart, and it seems like they've been doing it for years and years and years. So I enjoy those fresh perspectives. In addition to the old timers, they're not old, but the guys that have been around. It's fun listening to those new voices. Yeah, who's your number four, Tim? Who you got?
This is a video reviewer. So this is actually, I think, the only video reviewer on my list right now. But there's a good reason for it. It's 3-Minute Board Games. I don't remember the guy's name. He's an Australian.
Ooh, New Zealand. I think he'll get...
New Zealand. You're right.
Yeah. Sorry. I think he'll get pissed if he calls us.
Sorry. Got to edit that out. Yeah. So he's from New Zealand. His videos are exactly that. They're 3 to 4 minute videos that give you kind of a quick rundown of the rules, kind of tell you some basic facts about it. And then he gives us a really brief review at the end of it. I've always found his reviews to be very valuable because they're so quick. I can get a really quick introduction to what the components look like, what the game looks like, but also, you know, his take, which is very short at the end, but really quickly will tell me, you know, why he liked it or why he didn't like it. And then also, here are some games that if you wouldn't like this for this reason, here's another game that might be a good fit. Or if you like this about the game, here's another game. So he does it really quick, really succinct. And as a video goes, I have time to watch 3 minutes. So that's been really valuable. And I tend to find that his tastes align with mine pretty well.
I love 3-Minute Board Games channel. That when I was first getting into more serious board games, I watched his stuff all the time. He introduced me to like Spirit Island and Terraforming Mars, so many games. And just his format, like you said, Tim, is just amazing. He talks about the depth of a game, how many players you can play, what you'll find in the game, how it kind of plays. And then, like you said, he gives those, if you want a game that's a little more about this, then go with this game. If you want a game that's a little bit more about this, go with this game. So just a fantastic reviewer, succinct and to the point. So I can't get enough of that. He's also designed Red Dust Rebellion. It's a coin game, counterinsurgency game that's being published by GMT, and it's on their P500, kind of like their Kickstarter version. And it's a game on Mars with these four factions that kind of fight against each other and try to get the most points and win the game. So I'm looking forward to that. I backed it, not only because I love his channel, but because the game looks pretty cool and he's put his heart into it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I've been following that a little bit too. That's really fascinating. And I hope he's successful. Like, you know, it is always interesting to me as... you know, board game reviewers love to come on and talk about what works in a game and what doesn't, but how many of them actually then go out and actually design a game and design it successfully? And I'd love to see 3-Minute Board Games be that next Peter Bogdanovich with The Last Great Picture Show, where, you know, he was an old movie reviewer. You know, he'd be critical of a movie, and the directors would say, like, well, why don't you direct your own movie? So he went and directed The Last Great Picture Show, one of the best movies of all time. So, you know, let's see if 3-Minute Board Games can pull that off with Red Dust Rebellion, right? That's what it's called.
Yeah, I think that's the latest name.
The one other thing about 3-Minute Board Games, he's an activist as well, so he calls out problems with the treatment of indigenous people, that calls out problems with sexism and racism. And, you know, I mean, a lot of reviewers do that. They are doing that. It's something that I want to, you know, not make a focus of what we're doing here, but I think it's important to call out problems and also try to find ways to make the world better. So I appreciate that when reviewers put the risk into alienating some fans because they're calling out things that, that need to happen. So I appreciate that from him. All right, what's your number three?
My number three, I recently discovered this couple. They're currently based in Denmark, but I think they're Australian. They could be New Zealand as well. They sound Australian to me, but I could have that wrong. Called Bored of It. They have a great YouTube channel, a nice format that they use for reviewing games. A lot of the games they pick are the games I've been very interested in. So they have Eclipse Second Dawn, Dune Imperium, Barrage I'm interested in now because of them, Beyond the Sun. Just a lot of games that caught my interest that I already enjoy. It is kind of script. You can tell they're kind of have their stuff written out, but they're just a pleasure to watch, and they do some goofy stuff, and they show their dogs at the end, and it's cute. And they have, so it's man and woman. Tally is the woman's name, and I think Farrell is the man's name. Sorry if I got that wrong. But they're cute, and they have some nice, insightful reviews, tell us what they liked and what they didn't like about a game. So they're great. Recently discovered them. They have a decent library on YouTube.
49 videos, it looks like.
Entertaining. I don't know if you've listened to them ever, Tim, or have you heard of them?
No, they were completely not on my radar, so I'm excited. I'll check them out for sure. You know, and again, I don't do a lot. I don't watch a lot of video reviews, but I'll definitely check them out. The times I do watch video reviews is if there is a game that I've found I'm interested in and I just want to dig in a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Then I'll go and watch a couple of reviews from people that I enjoyed in the past, and so I'll definitely check them out next time I'm looking for a good video review.
Yeah. Who is your number three?
Okay, so this is a situation where there's a cast of characters, a group of people that are reviewing, but this is one specific reviewer in this group. Now, this is a very well-known board game podcast. That's the Secret Cabal Gaming Podcast. And I've been listening to, since I really first got heavy into gaming, this was one of the first podcasts that a friend of mine recommended to me. So I've enjoyed listening to them, gotten to know their personalities. It's a fun podcast. But to be honest, I have not gotten a lot of value on the reviews. I like the guys that are doing the reviews, and I like their banter, and I like the, you know, hearing about the different games, but I've never really felt like the way that they reviewed games was that super helpful for me personally. I didn't connect with their likes or their dislikes or whatever. But they just added another member maybe a year ago or right around there, a guy named Don. Don is great. He goes into a lot more detail. He's very articulate. He's very thoughtful. He really presents the good and bad. And I think he does something that with reviews that I try to do. And that is that even when he doesn't like a game, and you can tell he doesn't like it, and he'll talk about the flaws of it, but he's happy to say like, but hey, this just may not be the game for me, you know, and here's why, but here are some really great things about it. And I like that. I appreciate that when somebody is not just going to trash a game and say, I hated this game, it's garbage. But rather to say, these are the things that make me not want to come back to it. But here are some things that I could see somebody really liking, because, you know, I think it's good to have that perspective that just because you don't like a game doesn't mean it's a bad game. But anyway, I appreciate his point of view specifically. Again, I've enjoyed the show. I'm not saying that I don't get any value from the rest of the guys, but Don specifically, I think, has really brought some good perspective to that show.
That's a good point, Tim. That's something I should probably work on is, if a game doesn't work for me, there's still positives to every game. There's games that I don't enjoy that you really do enjoy. And I can see, like Rogers of the Ganges, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I can see, you know, everybody has different tastes. I can see why a game like that would fit your taste so much better than it fits my tastes. It's work to be able to recognize what might make a game good for someone who doesn't share the same interests that you might have.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's worth at least calling out what's unique about the game or, you know, like what's kind of different about it, if nothing else. There have been some games that we've reviewed that I haven't enjoyed at all, and I think it's been clear. But even with those games, I still like to at least recognize what works for me in them. And yeah, I think that's fun to do. Down to your number two.
My number two is Before You Play. And the hosts are, you know their names, Tim?
Yeah, it's Monique and Naveed.
Monique and Naveen, and they are relatively new to me as well, but they do some nice videos on YouTube, and I just enjoy their presentation and their dialogue with each other. They're just very relaxed, and the way they speak to each other is great, and they have a nice catalog as well. Before You Play has been kind of a new introduction to me and one that I enjoy. Have you watched much of their stuff?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of theirs. In fact, they're one of my go-tos. If there's a game I'm interested, I usually check to see if they've got a video first. And I like not only their reviews, and I like the reviews for some of the same reasons I was talking about Don from The Secret Cabal, but that they are very good about telling you when they didn't really necessarily like something, but also telling you what was good about it and who it might be a good fit for. They're rational, you know, and reasonable reviews, but they also do really great playthroughs. So if you want to kind of see how a game plays before you even hear the review, they do rules teaches, but also playthroughs, which I appreciate. They've sometimes learned games off of them. And I've bought some games specifically because of their playthroughs and reviews before. So they're definitely a favorite of mine. And they're in Los Angeles too. So, you know, they're close to you, Adam, but when I lived in Long Beach, as I was really starting to discover, and this was early in the pandemic, and I was starting to think like, man, I want to get to be a part of the board game community in Los Angeles a little bit more. And so I was, hoping to make some connections with some of these LA-based reviewers, but unfortunately I did move to Phoenix since then. So didn't get a chance to meet them at a convention or something like that, or local game store, but seemed like lovely people. I would love to hang out with them, hopefully get a chance to meet them at a con or something at some point. But I've also interacted a bit with them on Twitter and, just super nice, fun people. And I love their reviews. They actually just became a part of Rodney Smith's channel, I believe, because he does teaches, but he doesn't do playthroughs. And so I think they just started doing a series of playthroughs for the Watch It Played.
Is Rodney Smith growing a contingent, a following, an entourage?
Oh, yeah. He's got a few. Now, have you been following it all?
No, I know Rodney Smith well. I enjoy his teaching videos, but I haven't been following his rise.
Yes, so Paula Deming's part of his channel now. What's the guy? He's a British guy that does kind of a game show podcast about board games.
The Five Games for Doomsday, or is it that guy?
No. Anyway, he's got a couple other people. Chaz Marler from Paradise is one of his now. He's great. A great group of personalities anyway. So
okay. It's
another great addition to the channel. But yeah, he's got a little empire going on at this point.
Good for him. Yeah, he seems like a good dude.
Yeah.
We got your number two?
My number two I'm going to call out is a podcast that was part of the inspiration for why I wanted to start a podcast and a little bit of the format that we do, but that's Board Game Barrage. Board Game Barrage is another LA-based group. It's three guys that were just gaming friends, and I kind of caught them pretty early in their one of the earlier episodes, I think 4 or 5 or 6 or something like that, when I first started listening. And they just have a good rapport. They're funny. They're personalities that are, I think, very intentional. Like Kellen on the show, he plays the foil. He plays the bad guy, And so he wants you to hate him. They really are. I like listening to the reviews. They don't have the same taste as I do, especially Kellen tends to be a little bit more focused on party games and auction games, high conflict. The types of stuff, if you listen to what I like about board games, are not my thing. But Mark and Neelan are a little bit more in sync with what I like. But when they talk about a game, it's always interesting to hear what they think about it. And I get a sense, based on knowing their personalities, what they like, what they don't like, that if I've heard them talk about a game, I have a good sense for whether it's going to be a good fit for me as well. So I do appreciate their reviews. They get me excited about some games and turned off on some games. And that's what you go to board game reviews for. So.
And don't forget about Christina as well. She has a nice perspective, and she's really into troops on a map style games, which is very much what I'm into.
Christina, which is the blue tank from the group, right? Yeah, she's not in every episode, but she's been showing up more frequently. And I love her perspective as well. They just did their top 50 games of all time, and she was involved in it the first time this year. And it was fun to hear her perspective as well. Yeah, so that's my number two. Okay, down to your number one. Who is it, Adam?
My number one is two Canadian dudes, so very wrong about games, Mike Walker and Mark Bigney. And I found their podcast maybe when I was 50 episodes in, I think. They're just an entertaining, very tongue-in-cheek kind of sense of humor. Mark Bigney is very opinionated, and he knows it, and it's fun, and he has fun with it. So he doesn't take himself, he takes himself pretty seriously, but at the same time, he knows his flaws, and he's not afraid to poke fun at himself. Mike Walker, the other co-host, he's kind of the laid-back, subtle, very well-spoken, kind of soft voice, whereas, Mark Bigney is the outspoken, very opinionated, this is what's right and this is what's wrong, and I'm going to tell you how it is. So very nice contrast there. I don't always agree with their opinions, but sometimes it, you know, perks interest when they talk about a game. I want to find out about it. Someday it'd be fun to play a game with these guys just to see what they're like at the table and see their personalities. I always enjoy what they have to say. And Mark Bigney just seems, his knowledge about board games just seems, someone else said it, encyclopedic. This guy has been playing board games probably since he was like 2 years old, and he seems to know every single thing, and he can talk about, oh yeah, this board game, you know, this is a total copy of this board game that was from 1972 and again iterated in 83 and back in 99. Just very fun to listen to those two banter back and forth about board games they like and don't like and stuff that's going on in Canada.
Yeah, right on. You introduced me to these guys a few months back, or, you know, I don't know, 6 months, who knows what is time this year anyway. But at some point in the past, we were talking about podcasts and you mentioned them. So I started listening to them, and they're kind of on my regular rotation now. I don't listen to every episode, but when I've run out of some of my favorites, I flip over to them and I always enjoy it. It's like you said, you know, Mark especially is very opinionated, and I don't agree with, you know, his stance, for example, on luck in games. You know, like I just don't agree that luck cannot be a valuable thing in games. I'm not saying he always says that. I don't know if that's a stance, but from my, you know, most of the listens I've heard, that's the type of thing that he would be like, this game has too much luck. It's not balanced enough. You know, just things that I don't care about. So, but I do appreciate, like you said, his encyclopedic knowledge. It just, these guys blow me away. Like, it frustrates me so much that I can barely put together a sentence when I'm talking on this podcast, and these guys are just can, you know, talk for 5 minutes as if it was written out by a, you know, established veteran journalist. I love it. I love listening to it. It inspires me. Wish I could, you know, wish I could be as smart.
Right. They're really funny. They're really into dexterity games, which I don't really care about that much. Mm. And they're really into like those, I think they're called tabletop skirmish games, where it has a lot to do with like line of sight and this whole little battle system.
Right. Yeah, Warhammer type of stuff.
Yeah, Warhammer type of stuff that I've never had any experience with. Maybe they're awesome, but right now I don't have any interest in getting it. So they have some funny takes on stuff that I have no idea about, mm-hmm. which is fun to hear their perspective. So
yeah.
All right, Tim, what is your number one?
So my number one is a podcast that I have been listening to for several years. And the reason I had to bring them up is just that I think they release an episode every 2 weeks, but every time one of their episodes comes up on my feed, I usually just pause whatever else I'm listening to and I start listening to it. That's why they had to be my number one. They're just the ones I'm most excited to listen to every time. And that's Blue Peg, Pink Peg. Blue Peg, Pink Peg, from when I was listening to it, it used to be a group of four people on the podcast, Rob and Christina, who are a married couple. And then it used to be Patrick and Jeremy. And then I think Jeremy left for a little while and they had another guy come in. Jeremy came back, but then Patrick retired. So right now it's Rob, Christina, and Jeremy. I think it's Jeremy. For some reason, I'm afraid I don't have that right, no matter how much I listen to them. Anyway, just a group of gamers about our age. I love the reviews. They have a lot of banter at the beginning of the episode, which I could skip over, but I listen to it because they're relatively funny. They do a trivia bit. But then they get in and they talk about a number of games. Why I wanted to call them out as far as an actual board game reviewer is that they have a deep dive review in every episode. And I always look forward to that because I know that I'm going to get three perspectives, well thought out. You get to know their personalities and what they like, what they don't like. They give a focus on production. They give a focus on gameplay. They give a focus on replayability. So it's fun. Without even seeing a game, I can listen to the podcast and know whether it's a game I want to pick up. That's a hard thing to do since so much of board gaming is about the components and the visuals and the, you know, the physical game. So if somebody just talking about a game can make me excited about it, yeah, then I think they're offering a lot of service. You know, they're offering some value for me and for my time.
Yeah, that's great. I know you've been talking about them a lot. I've never listened to a full episode. I think I've listened to a partial episode, and then I don't know why. I've never gotten through. I'll have to make a concerted effort to get through a few of their episodes and see what they're all about.
Yeah, and I think you could literally skip. I don't know if they timestamp it, but the first 10 minutes is they do a trivia, kind of like a little trivia segment at the beginning of every episode where then they tie it in. So the trivia somewhere has a hint to something they talk about later in the episode. And then they give away prizes to listeners who can essentially link the two. So the trivia is generally fairly interesting. It's about some bizarre, you know, facts that are going on. It's not board game related though. So if you're not interested in that, just skip over it, get 10 minutes into the episode and listen to the board game talk, and you'll probably enjoy it.
Okay.
Cool. Well, you know, hopefully if you as listeners, if you were not familiar with all of those reviewers, give them a try and see if they offer anything for you. There's obviously a lot of other board game media, content creators, board game reviewers out there that we didn't mention. We just obviously probably haven't been introduced to tons and tons of them. We don't necessarily consume content in the same way. I know a lot of people are doing streams and Twitch, and I'm never going to be sitting around watching TV like that all the time, or, you know, YouTube like that all the time. So I'm sure there's lots of great reviewers depending on how you like to consume. But if you like to consume board game content like we do, hopefully some of those are a good fit for you.
That's one thing I'm realizing, Tim, is there's so many ways to consume media, especially during coronavirus where we're locked inside for the most part.
Yeah.
You're at your computer and you're clicking around and there's like 80 different ways to soak in information. So it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Plenty of stuff out there for everybody. All right. Well, that will wrap up our conversation about our top five board game reviewers. We're going to jump into our double take review right after this. Welcome back. So today we're going to take another look at Eclipse, Second Dawn for the Galaxy. Obviously, when we did the review initially, we did have, I think Chris was with us on that one as well. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get all three of our perspectives. Chris couldn't be with us tonight, so it's just going to be me and Adam. But we did play another game of Eclipse, Second Dawn for the Galaxy tonight, just before we started recording the podcast. So very much like our normal reviews. This was another look right after playing. Not going to be as structured as our normal reviews, but we just wanted to kind of take another look back at it and see how it held up and what we felt different about it. So Adam, why don't you start by just talking a little bit about what you remember about your last review, how you felt about Eclipse after the last play.
I think my last play, I was probably three or four plays into Eclipse and found it on Tabletop Simulator. Someone had just made a mod for it. So I was like, dudes, we got to play this game. Let's get it going. And I was just pumped to play it. And it seemed like it was well received by most of the guys. Well, everybody seemed to enjoy it a lot. I think maybe Tim enjoyed it the least. But Chris was pumped on it. Steve was pumped on it. And I was pumped on it. I was just so excited to play this game. It has some dice rolling, some combat. You build up your ships. You fly around in space. You explore some planets, get resources. So if you haven't heard, you got your Euro and your Ameritrash, your dice rolling, high theme mechanics all tied up into one, and they all flow together so nicely. Just amazingly excited to play this game when we first reviewed it. And still, I think I'm still pretty high on it. It's starting to feel perhaps a bit samey. You kind of go through, do your research, build up your ships, take advantage of some opportunities early on with some combat if you can. Otherwise, I just kind of stay safe and don't take too many risks until I can build up my armada and jump in at the end and try to attack either some center or some guardians, some ancients, get those points and get those reputation tiles and try to expand across as much territory as possible. So that's been kind of what I've been doing for the last 10 or 12 plays. I still enjoy that tons and tons. I would say it's starting to feel a little samey. But does that matter to me? Like, it's still pretty freaking amazing just doing what it does. The excitement's still there. The tension's still there. Dice rolling. I enjoy that aspect of it. Playing the odds and see how the dice work out in your favor or against you. The excitement of the combat. Having said that, I am looking forward to some new expansions to try out new factions. That's on the way, allegedly. I'm still pretty high on it, but I think it's maybe coming down just a couple steps for me from that initial review. What about you, Tim? How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, so you mentioned that, you know, maybe I wasn't the hottest on it. And I think that's true of our group, but I don't think it's a fault of the game. It's just, you know, as you know, it's just not the type of game that I'm usually really drawn to. High conflict, high luck. Luck is not the right... High conflict, but also like... Well, I'll get into a little bit more about it. I did enjoy it. I have enjoyed it. I anytime someone asks to play it, I've always been happy to jump in and play it. And there are some games that I wouldn't feel that way about. This isn't one of them. Like, I would pick this over, for example, Cthulhu Wars, which is, you know, one of Chris's favorite games, has a lot of similarities. But I do think that the mechanisms of Eclipse are just more interesting to me. The building up of your ships, the resource management. You know, so those are all good things. Some of the things that I had concerns with or complaints about in the past were that there's the potential for a lot of frustration, for a bad time for a player. And for two reasons. One is that there are some luck-based things that just, they can really impact your game. Like, I don't mind luck in a game when it's just like, okay, this turn didn't work out quite as well as I was hoping, but let's move on. This is a game, though, where bad luck, whether it's some bad exploration at the beginning or a couple bad combats, can literally take you out of the game and give you no chance of winning. And it's a long game. So to me, that's problematic. It doesn't mean that it's a bad time every time, and it doesn't mean that some people will ever care about it, but I just don't like to put people in that position where they might have a bad time playing. And I think Eclipse leads to that. On another play tonight, I don't think my feelings have changed too much on it. I won the game tonight. I had a pretty good run of it. So everything was going really well for me. It should have been the most fun play possible. I got to build up some cool dreadnoughts at the beginning and find some alien tech that made them huge and unstoppable. And then I went through a warp gate and took out somebody else's army. The problem was that I felt bad about what I was doing half the time. So, you know, we had a new player joined us tonight, someone I've known for a long time, but he hasn't joined us for our game nights online for a long time. But he came in tonight just at the luck of the draw. He had started close to a warp gate, one of his first exploration tiles, and I randomly drew one in this, I think maybe third round. Flip over a warp gate. I happen to have this big dreadnought built up, which is unusual for me because I don't tend to go, you know, heavy military early. But I had enough money to still do another movement. So at the end of that round, after he'd passed, really didn't have much else he could do about it. I warped all the way across the galaxy, came in, took out his militia, basically crushed him. And the whole rest of the game, all he did every turn was build up another ship and try to combat me and build up another, you know, like he just could never get anywhere with it. And it just, his game was over because of some bad luck, really. You know, so that's I think the flaws of the game, and they were there again tonight. And I don't love it. I would definitely have been frustrated if I was him. I can tell you that. I would have sat there for 2 hours being like, this thing happened that I had almost no control over. I'm just stuck trying to hold on. So I feel bad that he was in that position. My thoughts haven't changed too much. Still enjoyed my play. It's not a game that I think is... It's a game that lends itself to some people having a bad experience, and that makes me not want to bring it out.
So that was kind of like your worst case scenario, I feel like, for Eclipse coming to fruition, where you had to beat up, you know, a guy, you had to beat up Brian and take him out, and it really was. His game was kind of over. He did have a couple close combats with you where he almost,
yeah,
you know, one of his dreadnoughts almost took out two of your dreadnoughts, and it was just, there was a couple times where it was close, but, you know, that was just by luck of the dice roll, really. The odds were extremely against him. And yeah, all he could do was like build a dreadnought, put it out there, and have it get destroyed again. What else could he do? Not very much. Maybe he could have been more aware and not put that little warp portal,
the warp gate,
yeah, right, near his stuff. But, you know, sometimes that other warp gate doesn't even come out the whole game.
Right.
So, I guess lesson learned, you know, for Ryan. And he claims it's his new favorite game. I wonder if that's still true after the play tonight. I'm sure it is. He seemed like he was having a good enough time.
So. That's right. Yeah. The one other flaw I think I called out from it before was that the combat can just drag on. And again, I was in most of the combats tonight, so I got to be a part of it, and I still felt like it was dragging sometimes. So I still think, to me, that's a little bit of a concern. I know it's epic. I know there's those exciting moments when something good happens, but it can be annoying when two people are not even involved in conflict, have to see, you know, two people roll dice back and forth for 10 minutes before anything happens, I think.
I agree, but those other people can be getting the tech tray ready. They can be doing their their upkeep phase. They can, yeah, do all the busy work that needs to happen while the other guys are doing combat. So
yeah,
there's a way to mitigate the downtime, I think, if, you know, if two other guys are in combat, and if there's a lower tile where two other guys are in combat, those guys can be really doing their combat at the same time, as long as all the reputation tiles are drawn in the order that they're supposed
to. Yeah. And I don't want to, you know, I think everybody has been pretty invested every time there is a combat, because everybody's always hoping that the person who's kind of in the lead or doing the best is going to get knocked out. So they're, you know, everyone's rooting for Brian all night. Take Tim out. Right. And so I'm not saying that it's not still fun. It's just that I think it drags a little bit, the combat does.
Yeah, I can see that point. But I do, at the same time, I enjoy it, because I think all of us, Steve and myself, everybody was rooting for Brian. Yeah. We knew at that point in the game you had the edge. So if Brian had won one of those, for instance, I probably would have taken the lead, and everybody would have been happy. Nobody wants Tim to win. Everybody wants Adam to win. So While he did get his butt kicked, there was a couple close combats, and everybody was pulling for him, the underdog. And if he had pulled it off, it would have just been celebration in the galaxy.
Sure, but. Now, I want to go back to what you said about feeling a little samey. Mm-hmm. And I am starting to see that. But surprisingly, the game experience hasn't felt too samey for me. But it is interesting how the game tends to evolve pretty much the same every time. And the point range, like if somebody's having an okay game, you're going to end up between about 27 and 32 points. Like okay to good, that's about where you're going to end up. And you can have like two or three people that are just sitting right there and it's won by 1 point or two. Maybe it's just that one, the combat badge that got drawn out of the bag that you got lucky with, or it's
a reputation tile. Yeah.
Or the reputation tile, or you just happen to build one more tech tile. I think for all of that effort that goes in, I don't think it's often based on just a really great gameplay. I think the game is very balanced to say like, it's going to develop in this way and it's going to end up about this situation. With the exception that the people that are not doing well usually end up down in that, you know, 12 to 17 point range because they just got taken out of the, they got taken out of the game. Yeah. And they're, you know, not even close.
Tonight's game, you had 32 points. I had 31 points. I think I've seen upper 30s. Maybe somebody broke 40 one time, but
maybe that seems rare, but yeah. you're probably right.
But so that last round to pay for my upkeep, I had to pull an influence tile, an influence disc,
okay,
off a sector that was worth 1 point because I was two bucks short to pay for my upkeep days. So
tight.
That's, you won the game by $2, basically.
That's hilarious too, considering how much, like, it seemed like I was dominating, right? And I had gotten so many combats and won all of them, and you didn't seem to do much the whole game. Like you fought a couple ancients. I don't think you got into combat with, oh, you finally beat the GDCR at the end though too.
I did. I beat the big bad guy, the base GCD, yeah, Galactic, I don't know, GCDS, whatever it's called, in the middle there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I've been. If I can't win a combat, I don't really go for it unless it's a big one at the end that might give me a big swing, sure, or something. So I don't know. I feel like it's feeling a little samey for me, but at the same time, I enjoy it so much, mm-hmm, and that's okay with me that it's samey because it's so fun.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. But so for me, final thoughts here is that I'll never ask to play it. I don't think we've played it enough, and I know how it's going to go, and I think there's risk of it being a bad time for some people. But as long as you guys keep enjoying it, I will never have a problem playing it. I always like to see who's the faction I get. And then what can I do with them? What are the tech you get to explore? Sometimes if I feel like I'm ready for it, I like the combat. Sometimes I like to just turtle up and stand back and let everyone else go at it. So still enjoy my plays.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I like that you play against the players and not against the game. Almost every other player is doing might have some consequences to the future of your own faction or point scoring. So it's a fun game for me. I still really enjoy it.
All right, right on. That will wrap up our second take review of Eclipse, Second Dawn for the Galaxy.
And that'll wrap up the podcast for this week.
Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.